Jonas, and I was invited here to tell you something about IPCOP. Now, first, IPCOP is a Linux firewall distribution. So it's a full-fledged Linux distribution, which turns a computer into a very powerful firewall. The motto of IPCOP is the bad packet stop here. And that is some sort of a nice way to sum up what IPCOP actually does, because it's a stateful firewall. So it will monitor all the connections that you have, and it will know which packets are the good ones that it lets through, which are the ones that you requested that you want to have, and which are the bad packets which will stop at IPCOP. IPCOP is mainly geared towards small office and home office users, so it's very easy to set up. It runs on minimal hardware, and it provides all the basic features that you need, but if you are looking at like hundreds or thousands of clients, then it's probably you probably want something bigger. The current version of IPCOP is 1.4.21, and it uses Linux kernel 2.4. Version 2 is currently under development, and it's been so for quite some time. Unfortunately, it seems to be going quite slow, but I've been using version 1.4.21 and the previous versions for quite some time, and I mean, they're good enough. That's the website, ipcop.org, no surprise. You'll find the latest releases there. You'll find some manuals for the installation and administration, and also some general topics about networking. Also, there's quite some useful links to other sites with forums and support and everything. Now, I'm going to tell you what kind of network structure that IPCOP is designed to work with. And IPCOP supports up to 4 physically separated networks. So these are any networks, and IPCOP keeps them apart, and each network has like its own purpose. There is the red network, which is the untrusted network, so in most cases that will be the internet, which is basically just the network that IPCOP is shielding everything else from. So red is like the bad stuff, and we try to keep everything out from there. Then there's the green, which is the opposite. That's a protected local network. And every client in the green network is supposed to be a trusted client, so they will be allowed to do almost anything that obviously you allow them to do. And these two networks, they are like required for IPCOP to function, because otherwise if you only have a green, then there's no much use for a firewall. And there's 2 additional optional networks, which are blue, or one of them is blue, and you can use that for wireless devices. So it is kind of the same, it's like green, in the sense that it is supposed to be, there's supposed to be trusted clients in there, but there's some additional shielding going on from blue to the other networks, so that, you know, if somebody breaks into your wireless, they can't just wreak havoc on all the other clients that you're running in green. And then there's also orange, which is a DMZ, it's a demilitarized zone, and you can use that to run public servers. So you can run public servers there, which should be accessible from the internet on specific ports, but if a server in the orange zone gets compromised, then this server shouldn't be able to access anything in green or blue and create further harm. Here's a little diagram of how you could set up your network. So we have IPCOP here. Then there's the firewall that shields against red, and red is basically, it connects through a modem or something to the internet. Now, obviously, this doesn't need to be the internet. It could be any network that you want to protect the others against. Then down here we have green. In green, you can have all sorts of things, mainly clients. You can have servers in green. Over here is blue with wireless clients, and then there's orange, where you can run mail servers, web servers, things like that. And here's a little table that illustrates which accesses from which networks into the others are allowed or not. So here in this column, we have the network that the request is originating from, and here where it goes to. So for example, from the red network, you cannot connect to IPCOP because it's closed by default. And connecting to IPCOP means just to the actual machine for like configuring it or do stuff like that. But you can enable access via external access, and I will tell you more about these access control schemes later on. But you can see that from red, usually, or everything is closed by default. You can access green, blue, and orange with port forwarding, or green and blue with VPN. From green, everything is allowed. So from if you're in green, you can connect to any other network. If you're in blue, again, it's closed by default, unless you use blue access. In that case, you can connect to IP card red and orange. If you want to go to green from blue, you need DMZ pinholes or VPN. Orange is close to everything but red, so the servers in orange will be able to access the internet by default, but they are not able to access IP hub at all, and if they need to go into green or blue, then you need to set up DMZ pinholes. So to just give a small example, the file server here, for example, this is freely accessible to all the clients in green. Also, the clients in green can access those servers in orange, but if, for example, the web server in orange needs some files from the file server, then you need to set up a specific rule to allow that server to access the server in green on a specific port. But it can be done without any problems. Now, the access controls methods that you have is external access, which allows you can set up access from the red interface to IPCOP, and that is useful if you are somewhere away and suddenly there's a problem with your IPCOP at home and you need to connect to it and change something. Then there's port forwarding, which is probably the one that's mostly used, and it does what it says. It's forward a specific port from red to any of the other networks. So, for example, if you are running a web server in orange, then obviously you want to forward the port 80 to the web server in orange from red. Or if you're running a file sharing program in green, then you also need to set up port forwarding. Blue access is very much like the MAC or trusted MAC addresses in a wireless access point. So you can say which IP and or MAC addresses in the blue network are trusted, and these clients will be allowed to access the internet as well as the orange zone. If you want to access the green network from blue, you need to set up DMZ pinholes, or you can use VPN, and I'll tell you about that later. But with DMZ pinholes, you can basically access green or blue from orange or blue. And this is, it is like port forwarding, so it's on specific ports from specific addresses to other defined addresses. Now, to connect to the internet, you saw on the diagram that I showed you, for the red, I had a modem in there. There are several ways that you can connect your IPCOP to the internet. And one of the easiest is probably static IP. So you just assign a static IP address to your red interface, and that'll work. Or you can set up this, you say that that IPCOP should run a DHCP client on the red, and that's actually what I'm using at home because I have a cable modem which has a DHCP server, so IPCOP will just get its IP address from the cable modem by DHCP. You can also use the point-to-point over the Ethernet. So I used that when I had ADSL, and we had an ADSL router, which was a very cheap one, so it only supported up to 4 clients, and obviously we have more in our network at home. So what I did is I configured the ADSL router as a bridge, because it didn't actually route anymore, it just translated the from the phone line to Ethernet, and then IPCOP locked into the ADSL account with the internet service provider via point-to-point over Ethernet, and that worked really well. There's PPTP. I'm not quite sure what it is or how it works, but I'm just mentioning it for completeness. You can also at least try to hook up a modem by USB, and IPCOP does support some. There are some drivers in there, but I must say that the support seems to be rare. I've got a cable modem from Shaw, and I tried to hook it up with USB, but I couldn't get it to work. And lastly, you could also use an ISDN card, but I don't think that there's anybody who's still using those. Now, for configuration, the main configuration happens through a very easy-to-use web interface. So you saw in the table access to IPCOP, and this is mainly on the web interface, so you configure IPCOP. You can also set up SSH access, and it supports password-based authentication and public key-based authentication. And obviously with SSH, you have all the things like SCP, or you can tunnel through and whatever. Lastly, IPCOP comes with an update page integrated into the web interface, so it will automatically check whether there are updates available, and then you can download and install them right through the web interface, which is pretty convenient. Now I'm going to tell you the different services that IPCOP runs by default. First, there is the web proxy. It uses Squid for that, and you can run it on the green and or the blue interface. And you can also run it transparently on Pearl 80. So you won't even, if you run it transparently, you won't even have to reconfigure your clients to go through the web proxy. Every traffic on Pearl 80 will just be by default routed through the web proxy. There's a DHCP server, again, for green and blue. It can be configured in all sorts of ways, and you can create fixed and dynamic leases, which are the ones that you usually use. Then we have a dynamic DNS service, so or update service rather. So if you have a domain with a dynamic DNS service like dimdns.com or is it .org or whatever, then IPCOP, as soon as the red IP address changes, it will automatically update your new IP address to the dynamic DNS service so that it's always current, which is very handy if you're running servers in your installation that you want to be accessible from a nice dynamic DNS name. You can also set up host names in IPCOP and assign them to specific IP addresses, which is something that I find very useful because I don't want to remember all the IP addresses of clients that I have in my network. So usually you do that in conjunction with a fixed DHCP lease. So you set up DHCP lease and you give it a host name so that you can access that IP address with the host name rather than the address itself. You can also run a time server on IPCOP. And the way it works, it uses the NTP, the network time protocol, and you can say IPCOP should get the current time from these servers, and then IPCOP acts itself as a time server for your local network. You can also do traffic shaping, and basically what you do is you can assign three different priorities, low, medium, and high, to specific ports. So if somebody in your household is using a lot of file sharing programs and it impacts your web browsing, you can assign a higher priority to port 80 and a lower priority to the port that the file sharing program is using. IPCOP also comes with an intrusion detection system, and it uses Snort for that. For those of you who are not familiar with IDS, it's available on all interfaces. And basically what it does is it monitors all the packets on the interface that are coming in or going out. And it looks for known signatures of malicious attacks. So Snort has a database with signatures of attacks when if something bad is going on. Now IPCOP will monitor all the packets and look for those kinds of activities. And if it finds one, it will create a log entry. It will not take any further action, so it is just passive protection. And the user or the administrator has to monitor the log to see whether any bad stuff is going on. And the downside of that is it uses a lot of memory. So if you're going for a lightweight system and you don't have a strong, powerful CPU and you don't have much memory, then and you don't want to check the logs every day, then it probably doesn't make sense to use. But it's there if you want it.
Were the known packets of known malicious attacks, does it discard the packets every
time? No. As far as I know, it's passive only.
IDS only.
Yeah. And finally, IPCOP comes with a VPN server. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and it uses the IPsec protocol. And what you can do with it is you can access the green and or blue network from the red or the blue network. And the way that it works, VPN creates a secure and encrypted connection through the untrusted network. So in most cases, that would be the red network. So the two scenarios that you would use that is to create a net-to-net or a host-to-net, which is also called Road Warrior Network. So in the net-to-net, for example, there's a business with two separate locations, and each of them have their own network, and now they want to connect their two networks. And one way they could do that is lease a line, which is pretty expensive. Another way is to set up a VPN connection through the internet. So the VPN connection will be encrypted and secure, and it's completely transparent, so it's not visible from the internet, but the clients in the network, in two separate networks, through the VPN, it will seem as if they were directly connected. So it's a very neat way to just get your, as it says, a virtual private network connection.
Is this the standard tunneling? I guess it's a tunneling?
Yeah, it's sort of that way. Yeah. And in the Road Warrior scenario, you could have a centralized server somewhere in a business network, and then there's people working from home, and they can connect through VPN to your business network, and it is like they were physically there in a virtual, in a private or LAN network or something. And there's two ways that you can do the authentication. One is with a pre-shared key, and the other is with digital certificate. And pre-shared key might be useful for net-to-net because this connection should be always established and it's not going to change and everything. But for host-to-net, you probably don't want to use a pre-shared key because then every client would have to use the same one, or you would have to set up a different connection for every client. So digital certificates is the way to go there, and it works really well. Of course, the downside is you need to have the certificate installed on the client where you're connecting from. So if you're using like public PCs, then well, then you might not want to use VPN anyway, I guess. But still, you can remember a key. You probably can't remember a certificate. Now, that is those services are on IPCOP by default, and they are. I mean, it's a good basis of tools that you can. With which you can build a strong network, but sometimes you want to have additional features and capabilities, and that's where add-ons come in. And with add-ons, they are unofficial, so they're not developed by the IP development team, and they're also not tested by the team, but they are developed by users or individual developers, and there's user communities. So in most cases, I think even especially the very big add-ons, they should be secure and safe to use. Currently, there's more than 120 add-ons, and they are all centralized in the IPCOP add-ons.org database. Unfortunately, that website is currently only available in German, but the interface is very, very simple, so you can just use Google language tools to translate it, and it shouldn't be a problem. Now, I'm just going to tell you about some of the add-ons, which might be interesting. I'm not going to tell you about all of them, but there is Advanced Proxy. And what it does is it still uses the same proxy that's installed on IPCOP by default, but it extends the configuration options that you can have. And also it adds user management, so you can set up users and user groups, and you can give them passwords and so on, and you can control who actually has access to the internet through that proxy. There's block out traffic, which you saw that from a green network, everything's open by default. With block-out traffic, you can close everything by default and then only allow outbound connections to red on specific defined rules. So if you want to stop your kids from using child-friendly programs, you can use block-out traffic to just not allow traffic on those ports. There's COP filter, which installs a spam virus filter on IPCOP, and IPCOP will monitor all the email and web traffic and look for viruses and spam, and if it's client spam emails or viruses and emails, it will change them and send you a note. There's a URL filter, which you can use to block specific domains, URLs, and their files. Also, you can set up time-based access control. So if you only want to allow your kids to use Facebook 1 hour per day, you can do that with a URL filter, unless they find some sort of browser proxy over there. And then there's a wireless LAN access point. With that add-on, you can basically turn your IPCOP into a wireless access point. So in your blue network, then you won't need a separate wireless access point. You can just install a wireless access or a wireless card on IPCOP, and it will act as an access point. Now, that was like the theoretical part about IPCOP, and now I'm going to show you how to install it, and specifically how to install it on an SD card with a very small footprint. And IPCOP by default has very minimal hardware requirements, so it says on the website that 32 megabytes of RAM is enough to run IPCOP. Obviously, if you want to use more advanced features, especially IDS, you need more memory. I'm going to install IPCOP on a 128 megabyte SD card, which is enough. But again, if you want to keep extensive logs or a fake proxy cache, then you'll need more disk space. An important point with IPCOP is network adapters, because the networks that I described, the red, green, blue, and orange, they are physically separated. So for each one, you will actually need a different physical network adapter. And here, the number depends on the configuration that you want. You need at least one for green. If you are if you're using a USB modem or an ISDN card for red, but if you're using another network adapter there, then you need two, and then if you add blue or orange, you need even more. And here for network adapters, it actually makes sense to not just go with the cheapest one, but to get a decent one, because obviously they might need to handle a lot of traffic. Now, the setup that I have, I'm using this mini IT export, and here are some specs. It's got an embedded CPU, 500 megahertz. I've got 128 megabyte RAM installed. It's got an integrated graphics chip, two USB 1.1 ports, so not very fast. It has one network adapter installed on the board, and there's one PCI slot, but what's very nice, it's fanless, so no noise. That's the power supply that I'm using. And the bulk of the power supply is actually here in the external brick, and this is just what you plug into the board, and then you have those U connectors, and this is where you plug in power from the brick. It's got 90 watts, it's called a Pico PSU, and I've had good experience with it, others apparently not. Then, I'm not actually using a hard drive, but as mentioned, I'm using an SD card, and I've got an SD to IDE adapter. It also supports compact flash cards. So you just plug this into your IDE. Here is some external power. And unfortunately, it only supports SD version 1, so 2 gigabytes is the maximum size. But as I mentioned, I took up runs in for less than that. And to have a nice little box, I put it into this guy. And so this is designed for mini IP exports because nothing else will fit. And also Pico PSUs because there's not room for anything else. You can put in up to two 2.5-inch drives, and there's actually two hidden USB ports in the front, but I'm not able to use them because I don't think there's another USB connector on the board. There is a little hole for a wireless antenna in the back. Unfortunately, there's no space for a PCI card, which is a problem in my case because I want to run a green and a red interface, so I need at least two network adapters, but the board has only one. And I do have a PCI slot for another network adapter, but there's not enough room in the enclosure. So what I found is this, which is a nice little network card, which has Ethernet adapter facing inwards. So it doesn't need any space in the back of the case, and it fits nicely into it. So putting it all together, it looks like that. We have the Pico PSU plugs in here. This is the external connector that goes through it. There's a little hole for that. Here is the network adapter.
Shut up.
And I just pulled a network cable through the hole that was intended for the antenna. And it works fine. So, now that was enough of theory. Now I'm going to show you how to actually install it. And I have to switch that cable around here. And I'm going to install IPCOP from a CD. So I've got a CD drive hooked up here. There's other ways to install IPCOP. You can put it on a memory stick, but I found that the board didn't boot from a memory stick. You can also set up an HTTP server and get the files from there. So there's different ways, but using the CD is probably the easiest. Now let's see if it works here. Okay, so we boot it from the CD. There is some boot parameters that you can set regarding to hardware and installation, but they're very few, and in my case, I don't need them well, so I just hit enter the boot. Okay. IPCOP is actually available in, I think, like 35 languages, so the user or the web interface was translated, and also the installer, as you can see, is available in different languages. Alright, so we're using a CD-ROM. Incidentally, the SD to ID adapter, it will like show up as a hard drive. So it's not really transparent whether you're using an SD card or an actual hard drive, which is very good.
Why just because it's actually based off, it looks like CentOS
or... It is based on Linux from scratch.
Oh, really?
Okay, so it will erase all the data on the first hard disk that I have, which is the only one. It will put up some partitions and install all the files. And now this is going to take a few minutes, so if there's any more questions, I can take them.
Can you set the wireless interface up to be dual mode so that if you've got a conference room like this, the known laptops coming in can have access to the network, and the guests who are coming in can just get internet access?
That is a good question. Well, if you would have to set to get internet access from Blue, you need Blue Access. So you would have to set up that, and then the clients that are in Blue Access will automatically have access to the internet and to the orange zone. They will not have access to green, For that, you need to use DMZ pinholes or VPN. So I guess you could just set up a whole range of IP addresses in your blue access list, and these would be like the guests, and then the actual like known or the clients that you want to be able to access screen, they would have to use a VPN client, or you could give them specific IP addresses and allow port forwarding or DMZ pinholes to green.
I'm just trying to think how the laptop machines would see their DHCP server under those conditions.
The DHCP server will be the same for all of them. It's just DHCP that runs on blue, right?
But if the DHCP on the green side, which is normally existing, is a separate DHCP server.
Yeah, so that's true.
Arrange to see that broadcast DHCP request.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to get an address from the green DHCP server, but only from the blue. That's right. But obviously, you can integrate wireless into the green network, and I'm doing that at home. I only have red and green, but I also have wireless, which is part of green. Yeah. And then you could just use, I guess Mac filtering wouldn't work in that case, because you would still like the guests to be able to connect to, I guess you could just run two wireless networks, one guest and one password.
Because the only outfit I've seen, there's two outfits that do it. Cisco with their big rig will do it. If you have pockets, halfway in the basement, people have that. And there was one other small vendor whose name now escapes me, which will support that dual in on the one system.
That's actually becoming pretty common.
Yeah.
Aruba does it.
That's the one.
D-Link does it now.
D-Link does it now.
I just bought a DIR825, which is actually a router, but I'm just using it as an access point.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the box, D-Link firmware supports dual SSID. So one can be WPA2, one can be open, and it will actually differentiate on VLAN tags.
Cool.
And
that
was a DIR825. It's N. And even better, DDWRT is fully supported on it. It's a simultaneous dual band gigabit N router. So it's got the 4.4 gig switch built in. DDWRT seems stable as long as you're not touching the web interface. obviously not.
The traditional way to do this has always been, because access points are not really too expensive, you just buy two access points. But then you go, I'm wondering, now this one, I got a program on the switch, so this one's going to say, yeah. The administration, after you get 10 conference rooms been going, the administration gets pretty good. So if I could just set it all up so that it's all magic and it can go, this MAC address is a known MAC address and it just becomes part of the network, and you four interlopers, you get the internet and that's all.
If you have 10 conference rooms, buy the D-Link wireless switch and the D-Link slave access points.
Yeah. So mini version of Cisco.
Yeah, cheap version of Cisco.
Well, anything's cheaper than Cisco.
What is?
Anything's cheaper than Cisco.
Anyway.
All right, so the files have all been copied, the various partitions have been set up. Now we could import a configuration from a previous existing IP cop with using a USB key or from an HTTP server or whatever, but I'm just going to skip that. So now it wants to probe for the network cards that are available, and I'll let it do that. There is actually a list of all supported hardware on the website, so if you want to know whether something's going to work or not, then you can look it up there. It's found a card, but this is not the one that I want to assign for green, so I'm going to skip this and probe again, because in this first step it will only probe for a green card.
How do you tell the difference if you have more than one of the same chipset?
Try it out.
Okay.
Okay, this is the one I want to use for green, so I'm going to accept that, and I'm going to give it some IP address here. Okay, now it's finishing up the installation. And to see what comes out. Okay, and now before it reboots, we can do some more configuration. And this configuration is also available after the setup, so you can change that if you need to. Okay, so we're not going to use ISDN. Now, network configuration type, I'm going to choose green and red because I only have two adapters. Then, drivers and card assignments. So the green, the adapter for green is already set. For red, it's not set yet. So I'm basically going through the same thing as before. There it is. And red is going to be assigned to. OK. Okay, now address settings for green, it's already set, so I only need to do it for red, and I already set it to UDP. Okay, and that needs to be changed here, and actually the setup for the DX6 server comes on anyway, whether you choose it or not.
Now, in the real world, you wouldn't actually want to make your IP copy of your DHCP server.
It depends on your application.
If it gets compromised, every machine in the network's going to get compromised every time they restart.
I guess so, but IP cop shouldn't get compromised.
Shouldn't not.
Well, yeah. Obviously, I'm just using this at home, so yeah. IP copy is my DHCP server.
Missing a lot.
Oops, yeah, thank you. Okay, now I'm just going to say password. I would strongly recommend that you use something else.
That's so traditional.
So we just set the root password. This is the admin password, and the admin user is the user that logins to the web interface. And then there's a backup user to create backup copies of the configuration. Okay, now we're going to reboot.
So set this up for a whole network, say you have two or three computers around your house, Macs and PCs. You might get another old computer, put Linux on it, and then install this on it?
No, you just install this. You don't need to put it on Linux first. It's a Linux distribution.
That's a bare metal install. You just get a box with an Intel chip and memory.
Okay.
And throw the CD at it, dump.
Yeah, you can really use quite an old computer. It will run on almost anything.
I'm assuming it uses IP tables.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to plug this in here.
Yeah, but this is too far.
Yeah, 2.4 uses tables.
Okay. So the first time for generating all these key files, that takes a little time.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering in general, what's a trusted network? If I have family members who aren't malicious, but they're running PCs with Internet Explorer and stuff like that, is there a downloading those? I assume that's untrusted? Or?
No.
I guess trusted in this sense here is just it is allowed to connect to the other network.
Trusted is a political decision.
Yeah. If you have these kinds of concerns, then you would want to install the block out traffic add-on to basically block all the traffic by default and only allow it on specific ports. And then you would, for a trusted network, there's actually in the new version of IPCOP, they adopted the concept of open, half open, and closed. So in this case here, in this version, it's just trusted or the green is open. In the version 2, you can set it to half open, which means it will not be allowed to for outbound connections either unless you specify it.
Right. But I have my home network set up so that anything that originates in the network is okay.
Yes, that's the default setup.
The stuff my family is running, I'm not sure if that's safe or not.
Yeah.
That's why you just put them in another zone.
Yeah, I should
put them in the blue zone, basically.
Yeah. What do you do with a printer that's in to a system in the green where you want your wireless to go through it?
If you want your wireless people to be able to print,
plug it into the IP cop box instead.
Well, I guess you would have to use either VPN to connect from blue into the green network.
Or
with the exact pinholes, if you know the ports which are used, then you can set up the exact pinholes. Okay, so that's the sound that IP cop makes when it's booted up. And it's taken quite a while, so I suspect that it couldn't get a DHCP lease.
DHCP is very slow.
Okay, so now I install IPCOP as if I would install it on a hard disk. So I just plug in the CD and install it. Now, since I'm using an SD card, there is an additional thing that you can do. You can create an image for an SD card, and it will change IPCOP in a way that it will create a RAM disk to store all the log files and then only write to the SD card like every day or every 2 days or so. So it will reduce the number of writes to the card, which can extend the life of your card. And I'm not going to show you the whole procedure because that's just going to take too long, but I'll show you like the steps that are needed to do that. And the first step is to upload two files which you can download from the IPCOP website to the IPCOP. Basically just shell scripts to create that flash image. And, yeah?
A video.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so first, to upload them, I could use a memory stick, but I'm rather going to use SSH. So I'm going to enable my network connection here. So I connected, this computer now is in the green zone of IPCOP, and I just connected it through a cross cable, and we should get an IP address very soon.
Apparently you failed to sacrifice the necessary goat before the meeting.
Well, I tried it a couple of times.
The Linux box is refusing to talk to it.
Sometimes the some routers in DHCP say they won't start issuing addresses unless it's a public address.
Actually, that shouldn't be. I tried it without it having a public address, and it did work. So, but obviously this isn't working. So, well, let's just try it again.
Maybe filter off our Wi-Fi devices. Good job.
Well, there was 572 base stations in the audience. Base stations. Between MiFi and all the other stuff. It wasn't that he didn't have a secure network to himself, it's just that there was no channels left in the airspace.
So I think I should check configuration here.
I've actually seen a Kismet explode, which probably would have happened in that space.
Really? You probably cooked and walked around the island.
Well, there's your problem.
All right, so I'm going to run the red on static. And actually, I'm not interested in that, really.
So what was wrong?
I'm not sure yet.
Demonstration syndrome.
Yes, most likely. Because I tried it once or twice and it worked. All right, let's see. So let's try to see.
Try to hit config again.
Yeah, you can read it too.
Yeah. Well, but the ETH0 was up before, and that's the one I'm actually using.
Okay. And it does have transmission traffic to and from it, so.
Let's maybe check whether I have the right Curtis on. I think I do. Yeah, that's the on chip one. That's on.
So the green's on red wire.
Yes.
And the red's on the blue wire. Oh, yeah, it's probably not right.
Well, push the S and make sure it is running.
What would that be?
That's it. There's already a DHCP server running. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then that's not the problem.
Okay, we can try that. And if all that fails, I plan for every possible contingency and install the virtual machine on this computer with IPCOP on it, so I could show it the web interface from there.
That is painful.
There was the shutdown signal.
It's kind of corny, but I wouldn't mind if all my boxes did that. ACPI is not enabled by default. Okay.
Just realized that nothing on virtual machine is starting. Virtual box is giving me some troubles as well.
Did
definitely forgot the code.
Well, what would happen is you'd install that shell or copy that shell script, then you create a flash image, and you burn or copy the flash image to another card, and then you boot IPCOP from there. And the important thing is, or an important thing is, you should, the initial installation should be done on a system which is similar or even the same system with a similar hardware configuration. Yeah. Because what I first tried is I installed IPCOP on a virtual machine, created the flash image and burnt that flash image to a card and then booted it up on this machine, and it booted fine, only it didn't recognize my USB keyboard, so I was kind of helpless. But yeah, you could even do that. Now, DHCP is still not working, unfortunately.
Can you just go and set the IP address card on the laptop? And
I guess I could do that. Okay.
Not a cable problem,
maybe. Well, maybe
lights,
it is. I'm not sure.
The lights blink on the back of the laptop.
Well, I do see there's activity here. It says it received some bytes. It didn't send anything, though. So, I don't know. Okay, right. If I just set it by hand, that actually should work.
I see blinkage. While we're waiting, where did you get the Mini ITX case?
Mini box, or well, I got it in CIX, but it's a mini box case. Okay, let's see.
Oh. No go.
I can connect to the IP card.
No.
Oh, there we go. Okay, I can use the main use the IP address. Well, no, I guess it's not set up as the main. All right. Okay, so I connect to HTTPS 182.168.10.1 and with the non-standard port 445. Obviously, we'll complain about the certificate because I don't have the root certificate installed, and also IPCOP identifies itself as IPCOP.mod, so, but that's okay. All right, in this home screen, you see those three buttons here, and if you're using some sort of dial-up, then you can connect and disconnect with those. And there's actually a special user called dial user, which only has access to connecting and disconnecting. But if you want to use the web interface for any other administrative purposes, you need to log in with your admin user. And for example, well, we won't see much on the updates page because we don't have internet access, but still I can show you what it looks like. So you can refresh the list if you have internet access, and then the updates will show up here, and you can download them and install them. And here there's all sorts of different options. SSH access is an interesting one, so you can enable SSH access and with TCP and or tunneling. Then there's some information about the system status, and with this you see nicely what things are running. So the HTTP server is running, although I seem to be unable to get a lease still. There's IDS for green and red, because those are the only two interfaces that we have. They are disabled now, and I'm going to keep it that way, because there's not much memory in there. NDP is not running, VPN and proxy neither, but you can see also disk space usage and all sorts of useful information. You can get basically the IF config and the leases that are currently out. And what's neat is system graphs, and obviously this guy hasn't been running for a long time yet, but you see CPU usage, memory usage, swap space usage, disk accesses, and you can go to a detailed usage for day, week, month, and year. So once you have your IPCOP running for a long time, this might be interesting to look at. And similarly, you have traffic graphs on all the networks, so you can see if somebody is downloading a lot or uploading a lot or whatever. On the network, there's some things where you can set up a dial-up connection, and since I haven't chosen TDPoE, if you want to point to port over Ethernet, you would choose that in the setup, and then this interface changes so that you can actually give your username and password and everything. But you can set up different connections if you have different ones, but I think nowadays almost everything is just persistent. There's also, you can upload, or at least you can try to upload some drivers for your modem that you want to connect by USB or something, but one of the weak points of IPCOP, at least in this version, is that the hardware support is very limited. But as long as you're not using something that's too new or too fancy, it should work. Then on the services, you can configure all the various services. So if you look at DHCP server, it actually says it is enabled, and these should be the two addresses or the range of addresses that it assigns from, but something isn't working. Then, well, look at the proxy. You can actually connect an upstream proxy if there is one, so with username and password, and you can set the cache size and what object should be cached and which one shouldn't be cached and so on. And the other things here, which are not terribly interesting, port forwarding, pretty basic. You choose the protocol. You can set up, if you have different IP addresses on red, you could set, you could tell which one that it should originate from, but I have only one, so it's just default IP. You can give a source port, destination IP address, and the destination port, which doesn't actually need to be the same. So you could be running an HTTP server internally on port 83, but have it have the port 80 from red forwarded to port 83 on orange, so that people could connect to on port 83 to your web server. Why you want to do that, I don't know. And you can set up external access. Right now it's for 113, which I believe is for some authentication in VPN. And firewall options, which are not many. and there is a beta release candidate for version 2 out, and they have some more options, but it looks pretty much the same. I think the main thing that they changed is they added more hardware support. And then there's VPN connections, and you can actually generate certificates and root certificates and everything directly from the web interface, so you don't even need to log on with SSH. But usually if you want to do, or if you want to have more control on SSH, obviously it's a choice. And there's various logs or settings. You can actually, you can use a syslog service. So if you're running it on a 128 megabit SD card and you want to keep logs, then you can just send them to a different server with a bit more storage. Yeah, there's all kinds. Well, yeah, obviously it's not very old. So. Well, I think that's about all I want to show you. I'm sorry about the things that didn't work, but at least I hope you got an idea of what it is, what you can do with it, and how you install it. Now, if there's any more questions.
You mentioned that at home you put blue and green together, wireless and your LAN together into one network.
Well, I don't actually have blue and green together. I just have a green network, and in the green I have a wireless access point.
Usually it's done like a VLAN, right? How do you do that on that one?
Actually, I have a wireless router in there, which has DHCP disabled, so it just acts as an access point, and the wireless clients will connect through that, and they will get their IP address from IPCOP, from DHCP server.
So it's just a bridge.
Yeah.
A bridge.
And so it's doing all the security on the wireless side? The access point?
It's the access point, yeah. I got a VPA encryption, so, and the MAC filter. Yeah.
You could, in your green zone, put a wireless printer, and your computer's compared to it, but the guy who comes to your front porch can't send you junk mail.
Yeah. If obviously, if you set up your wireless access point, if it's encrypted and everything, then
yeah. Yeah, I cuz it out in a rural area, and a couple of friends also living in rural area as well. They don't have access to DHCP or cable. I noticed that you've got a setting in there for dial-up modems. How extensive is the list of modems that are supported?
Not very extensive, yeah. I'm afraid, yeah.
Basically, 3POM and Hazy.
Yeah, you would have to look it up on the website. I've never used it with dial-up modems, so unfortunately, I can't speak to it. So.
Yeah,
that's
probably just like drivers.
Well, there is the possibility to upload drivers, but obviously these would have to be Linux drivers, so... Mm-hmm.
Well, even an older motherboard's got a serial port. Use an external modem. Go down to Cyrotech and see what Tom's got to put behind the back. Find hardware for the box and then an old Hayes modem along that probably.
Yeah, my cousin's got an external modem, but my friends, they don't.
I'm curious, yes, I think that's like a feature that I want. Have you any experience with somebody that would just be like video to or video to?
Actually, actually not, no. I've been, actually in high school, my physics teacher, he was using IPCOP, I think, for some of the networks in school and introduced me to it, so that's the only one I know, so unfortunately I can't compare. Actually, one question that I was sure would come up was IP version 6. Mm-hmm. And I looked for it on the website and in documentation, and I couldn't find anything specifically saying it only supports 4 or it will support 6. But as far as I know, at least this version, in the various dialogues, you're not able to enter an IPv6 IP address. So it doesn't seem to support that. And I think, I'm not sure what's going to happen with version 2, but in any case, you might be able to, you know, tinker around with it and just try to do it yourself.
How often is this getting updated?
Not very often. I think the last update, so this installation is, the installation is actually 1.4.20, and that was released late 2008 maybe, and the only update since then was 21, which was a year ago or so, but only very minor bug fixes. So development seems to be going very slow.
I think you said your update's 687 days out of the day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jonas.